welcome to episode 225 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
What dictates how you announce the episode? Because sometimes it's 225, sometimes it's 225. What is the defining parameter?
These are the mysteries of the universe, and not even I can tell you.
This is what makes me waking up in a cold sweat at 3 a.m.
Why did he say it like
why
that?
Why did he do it? 225.
Why did he spell out each number individually instead of just saying the number? Maybe next week I'll just read it backwards, like 622.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. It's a completely different thing.
We just skipped 300
episodes. Genuinely have no idea. I just, on the day, just decide this is how I'm going to say
it. See where the wind takes you.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. The colder it is, the slower I have to enunciate each word. So,
have you found that today is weirdly warm? Like it's not.
Yes.
It's not hot, but it's not like that.
I'm like in a t-shirt. It feels very warm today. Like I woke up without any like blankets on me. I must have subconsciously.
Yeah,
been like,
Lenska this. Said she woke up this morning and she thought like shit. We left the heater on last night
because it was so warm.
She was like, no, it's just really warm. That's so weird.
Yeah, this summer, this winter is strange so far. I won't lie. It's like being quite chilly and whatever, and then we have during the day. It's usually the typical sun and warm, but today is just like warm, warm. Maybe it's gearing up for another last rain of the season.
Let me tell you my dilemma. So yesterday went for a lunchtime run. Okay, get home, take my shoes off, and I learned 2 weeks ago. Left my shoes outside because I'm like, it's winter, it won't rain. My shoes got wet because it rained like all the time.
Wait, did it rain yesterday?
No. This is 2 weeks ago. I was like,
okay. I was like, what?
It doesn't rain. I'm going to leave my shoes outside to like air out, whatever. It rained. Yeah. They got soaked. Okay. Yesterday, get home, lunch after my lunchtime run, take my shoes off. And I think, should I leave this outside? It could rain. And I look up at the sky, not a single cloud. I'm like, there's no ways. The rain is done. Like it has to be done. Okay. Get up this morning at 3 because the cats are screaming at me to feed them because that's what they do. Climb back into bed and I just hear, it sounds like a very light drizzle on the roof. Like, I don't know if it's the wind or it's the rain, but all I think at 3 a.m. is, my shoes are outside. Should I get up and go get them? I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to sleep. They can get wet. It didn't rain, but I think there was like a very light, like a spit of drizzle. When I climb back into bed. But I'm like, what is this weather, man? Like, stop raining. It's done now. It's time.
No, it should be done. Like, well, then again, you are going to a climate where it's going to be raining all the time. So this is just practice for you.
Listen, in the UK, they had a heat wave last summer. Okay. And I'm like, what is that heat wave?
That's true.
And they're like, it was 20 degrees. I'm like, no, I'm kidding. It was much higher than that.
It was like 30, but I don't think their houses are equipped for that. Yeah. Houses are like so cool and airy.
Yeah, on the flip side, maybe I won't be as cold in winter because those houses are actually built for winter.
Warm, yeah, they're very, very warm.
I don't know.
Walk outside and you're like, oh my God, I was in the UK once for, it was some Ubisoft thing. I can't remember which game it was, but it was like end of November or middle of November and it was fucking cold. Yeah. I was walking down the street like at night, dead of night, and I was like, I might just die. This is so
South
so
Africa, you
cold.
Walk down the street, you think I might just die because someone's gonna rob you.
Yeah, it's not the weather. You might just die because someone
UK,
might
you're
stab
like, oh my God,
you,
it's snowing. Hypothermia, please no.
See, there's a threat everywhere. It just comes from different places.
Yeah, you never know where it'll come from.
Yeah, the cold is going to shiv you in the ribs.
Oh my God, in the ribs, yes. That's violence.
I see you've got a nice Legend of Zelda bag in the background there.
It is.
Look at it.
Beautiful.
It's not for sale.
Here's the box. Please excuse the hair removal thing over there, but here's the box. Very nice. Very nice press kit. The bag is real, real hot.
Primo.
It's primo. It's definitely a primo press kit. You know why? Because Tears of the Kingdom is a primo game and Nintendo weren't just going to let people not know that. They put all the budget.
They're like, damn, if you've got any any doubts about the game, just check this fucking backpack.
Doug Bowser himself sends an email out saying, listen, I've just robbed Mario. I've got all the money. let's put it towards something good, like a nice press kit for Tears of the Kingdom.
In the eventual press kit or whatever for the next Mario game, I want green Mario pipe slippers. Make it so, Doug Bowser.
Oh, if we're not getting green slippers, we're not giving your game 10 out of 10. I mean,
exactly. Or a Goomba backpack or
those Goomba have to hat. Exist. Oh my Goomba God. Hats exist.
No, Goomba hats exist. I'm pretty sure Toad hats exist as well, so you can just look like Toad.
Yeah, you take it off and you just have a huge forehead.
Yeah. I still need to see the movie. I just haven't had a chance to go. I think it's still showing at the cinema. I actually have no idea, but I think it's starting to come to like digital platforms where you can, you know, rent it and buy it and whatever. Yeah. So maybe we'll just do that.
The power of movies, though. My godchild and nephew have watched the Mario movie. They like the Mario movie. When was it? We were at my brother for Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. See, my niece playing on her Switch. She's playing Mario. Like, damn.
Oh, wow.
The power of movies.
Which Mario was she playing? Was it Super Mario Sunshine?
No, it was that bundle that's Bowser's Fury and Super Mario 3D World.
Super Mario 3D World, yeah. It's a good one. 3D World's good. Bowser's Fury, also good.
Yeah. Super Mario Galaxy, though, still the best. Best ever was.
You know, I would agree with you if I had played it, but haven't done that yet.
So good. But yeah, the power of movies.
The power of movies and the power of video games. Wow. Let's check my chat to talk about video games. This is an early segue because there's just lots to get through. There's just a lot happening. If you're listening to this, you probably know that this episode's late, and that's for two reasons. It turns out there are two embargoes on the exact same day, which is quite fortunate. But yeah, you know, I've been playing Diablo 4, and Matthew's been playing Street Fighter 6, and the embargo for Street Fighter was earlier today, or earlier the day you're listening to this, I guess, and Diablo's now, and that's why the episode's early out now. Mm. So, I want to hear about Street Fighter.
Oh, we're talking Street Fighter first. I wasn't.
I want to hear about Street Fighter.
Let's say, if you are listening to this on a Monday, how the hell did you get the episode?
Yeah, how? What's going on? Go to jail. We are reporting you to the podcast police. Also, goodness. We had no part in this. We did not break an embargo.
No, like, come on. Let me just get my footage up here for.
Footage
for Street Fighter.
It is funny. The codes for these came in at like the exact same time, and then the embargoes are for the exact same time. So I was just like, well, we just have to divvy this up completely. So yeah, I'm very keen to get started on Street Fighter like this weekend.
Street Fighter. So let's
look at this. Look at this Afro man.
So let's start. Oh my God, I didn't timestamp this. I'm the absolute worst at this.
How dare you? Jeez.
Let me just put a little timestamp there. So Street Fighter, Street Fighter 4. We're two iterations along. What do you want to know about the game? You know, it's Street Fighter.
Hmm. So I know from the betas that we played, which we've spoken about in the past, like if you're watching the video now, this is the sort of like lobby system. Mm. And you can go and sit at like an arcade cabinet and someone can sit at the opposite end and then you fight them, which is kind of a novel idea.
Yeah.
What I want to know about first and foremost is this whack single player campaign. That
do you want to start off there? I was going to start off with the default, you know, the multiplayer hub and stuff. But let's go there.
It's cool. Okay, let's stop. Yeah. You're running the show. Yeah, you played the game. Let's go. Land.
So I will just start off. You know, Street Fighter 6, as you expect, is a fighting game in the long running franchise. It's been around for many, many decades. I played Street Fighter 4 on the PS3 years ago. Like, when I say I played it, I touched it. I enjoyed it. I have nothing to do with Street Fighter 5. So there's like this huge gap of, you know, experience on my part. So I can't tell you like, oh, I know Street Fighter 6, you know, changed this or did that. But what I can tell you is that Street Fighter VI as a fighting game is, it's really good. I think the hub system you touched on earlier is a very novel idea, in that I can't imagine being a kid and knowing one day I won't have to go to the arcade to play like Street Fighter II, for example. I can just sit at home, you know, on the comfort of my couch, walk around a virtual huge arcade room and just walk up to people and challenge them. And, you know, not just challenge them side by side, but in a world where I think the Street Fighter must have rollback netcode, because I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah.
I've not had any, I had one experience where there was a bit of delay, but I think my net was acting up. But other than that, I mean, if you're watching the footage, you can even see on the top, it says my ping is 173, which for a fighting game, you think.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
No, but well, for a fighting game, you think like, shit, you can't have any sort of delay because that puts you at a disadvantage. I'm not particularly good at Street Fighter, but I've never felt like, oh no, my opponent punched before I did, and that split second made the world of difference. Like maybe a professional Street Fighter, you know, esport person will feel it more than I will, but from my side, it feels good. Like everything's so smooth.
You were nearly aced in that match.
Listen, I don't know who's reviewing this game, but the people I've played up against in this review period have destroyed me. I'll come out and say that I don't think there's any footage of me winning.
It's fine. Yeah, you're new to it. It's okay.
But
I think that's modern controls.
A good segue is that Street Fighter VI introduces this clever system, and I don't know if it's been done before, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but it has a thing called modern controls and classic controls. Classic controls being, if you want to do a Shoryuken, it's the typical like down, forward, punch, you know, combo. Modern controls, that's the right way to say it. modern controls just cuts out a lot of the, you know, the in-between inputs to make the game far more accessible to newcomers. So I don't know what that exact command is, but it might be as simple as pushing forward and punch, and you'll get to execute the same move. And I think it's a very clever system because, like, it gives you an advantage in that, you know, as a newcomer, you can now execute moves. But I don't think it's going to be enough for you to, like, all of a sudden you're a god at this game, because a pro player is still going to look at you and go, well, I know when to block, I know how to read you. But it just bridges that gap a bit, which is very helpful because the reality is fighting games can be very overwhelming. Like, there might be systems or lots of characters with different moves you need to learn, and trying to figure out how do you do a move, let alone string together a combo, it takes time, which some people either don't want to bother with or just don't have the time to invest into learning. I was quite proud of that.
I guess
combo.
It gives you the chance to learn the game's like pace, and because you're right, I think fighting games are chess games. You're reading your opponent, you're deciding on what moves to do when. So if you can take out the middleman of like, okay, well, let's take out the complexity of actually executing those moves and just keep it so that you can focus on the rhythm of the fight and execute what you want to when you want to, then I think that's a really cool middle ground. I definitely will use modern controls when I play. Like, I'm not going to take hours and hours and hours to learn the muscle memory for all the quarter circles and whatever, and then only start really understanding, you know, how to play. Because the reality is Street Fighter VI is not the game that I'm going to play for the rest of the year. I just want to have some fun, you know, with it here and there and jump in every now and then. And I think modern controls probably affords that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like you said, I don't think anyone using modern controls is going to be at Evo. Like, you're going to get slammed.
No, I was going to say, like, so. even on that front, like, I'm pretty sure Evo, like, it'll almost be a formality, but I don't think modern controls would be allowed at a tournament like that. Because maybe I'm wrong, and like, as a professional Street Fighter player, maybe modern controls just make your life way easier. But I don't think it works like that. I think if you've got the muscle memory down, you know, for these quick inputs, you're not going to use it. Like, it almost,
I think,
be
they're also
upon
a bit limiting to a sense. It's you know, if I think of how the sort of easy or automatic modes in Dragon Ball Fighters worked, it was kind of like that. Like, you could have a great time on those easier controls, but the standard controls gave you far more flexibility.
Yeah.
And I think in a competitive sense, that's always going to trump ease of use.
For sure. So, I will say, like, I really love the modern and classic control idea. I will say, though, that the way it's been executed from a menu perspective is, like, horrendous. It feels like at no point, maybe I'm wrong, but at no point do I recall the game starting going, like, which would be your preferred control method? You just start and everything's in modern controls, like, by default. In sorry, the footage, I laughed there. I found my brother. Another dude with an afro just chilling. My long-lost Street Fighter brother. At no point, you know, it feels like they flip modern controls on by default, which I guess is fine because, you know, there'll be a lot of newcomers. But then to try to figure out how to put it off. So, like, I was playing with Jeff and Darren one evening, and I realized, I was like, oh, like, I'm on modern controls, like, because I can't do a certain move which is, you know, limited or exists on classic controls, or like it exists on modern, but I didn't know what the input was or what the button press was for it. So I go and then I change it back. I've been playing like Ryu, so I change it to classic, and then late in the evening I go, oh, let me play random, you know, because let me measure on with all the characters. Long story short, I figured I had to change my input, my preferred controller format for every single character individually. So I had to go like Cammy, I want her on classic. Blanca,
oh,
I want
my
her on
God,
classic.
That is atrocious.
I was like,
no.
Why is it like, I get
there
it.
Should
maybe
be a global toggle.
Yeah,
like,
maybe it's obviously the thinking of like, maybe you feel very strong with one character, so you want them to be on classic and the rest. But I'm like, surely just make it a global thing. Like,
yes,
just flip it on or off, you know? And then the same thing happened in the story mode, which we'll get to shortly, where I started off with the multiplayer lobby stuff. Sorry, just a quick side note. If you're watching the footage and wondering why that was going so quickly, it's because I'm busy
catching up to the current game.
I was spectating a cabinet, so they're just catching up on my side. So when I moved from, you know, multiplayer to the single player mode, That too, for some reason, was just defaulted to modern controllers. And I was like, but wow, like in multiplayer, I've put everything on classic. And then to find where to change a whole separate menu, there was a whole separate option to change the story mode's character to classic controllers. I was like, that just feels unnecessary.
No,
like,
that sounds ridiculous.
That to me is just like, I know it's a small criticism, but like, just make it a global setting. Like, patch that in.
I agree.
I think it's a no-brainer. But yeah, I think let's get to the meat of this game. Let's just fast forward to some action.
Oh my goodness, what the hell was happening there?
So Street Fighter VI includes a story mode. And I'm not going to mince words. The theme of the story is you're just a newbie and you want to get strong. Like
cool.
The main thread here is that you just want to be the world's best fighter. And to do that, you're just going to, you know, you're going to hang out with these legendary coaches, and then you're going to go do some stuff in town, including just challenging random people to fight.
You just challenged like a random mime on the street to a fight. And he was like, cool.
I'm a level 2 fighter. He's level 5. So he's got the advantage, but you best believe I'm going to sort him out. The way the story is structured is that you start off at a gymnasium where Luke, the character Luke, is the coach. So he becomes like your master, okay? And he gives you the foundation of, you know, how the game works, things that you can do in this world, and then he sets you off on this journey to become, you know, the best fighter. So, you know, in terms of input, my character, the moves you are seeing, because Luke is my master, it's got his subsets of moves. Like, I can do a whole lot of like punching.
Yeah,
moves.
I can recognize like that like forward punch is very.
So that's
much
his
part.
Signature move. But like late in the story, I meet Chun-Li, and then I could adopt to use her style rather. And then all of a sudden, like, kicks are my forte, if that makes sense. But what's quite cool, there's customization that comes in where you can sort of start blending special moves together. It's like I could do. You know, I could have, there's limited slots, but I could have like one of Luke's moves with one of Chun-Li's moves. Now all of a sudden my character's like tailored to me in a sense.
Okay.
Like I have a foundational move set based on who my master is, but there are special moves that can blend, you know, across different masters' moves that you meet through the story. But I mean, so in structurally, like, it's a very cool premise. In terms of story, I think they really lent into like Yakuza territory where it's wacky. Like, if you're watching the footage now,
I was literally gonna say, this looks very Yakuza.
Like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's this very serious, oh, you want to be the best fighter in the world, but to do that, you're going to go fight random people on the streets, including gang members and...
gang members who run at you with cardboard with boxes on their heads.
Cardboard boxes on their head. But it's funny because if you've noticed in the fights, like my character's called an avatar. That's what they refer to it in the game. My avatar has a level. It's they've weaved through like a role-playing system in this game, in that the more fights you do, you get experience, you level up, your base stats improve, okay? But then there are things like, I can buy equipment which boost everything from like my punching strength to my vitality. So like, I can buy a hat that will boost certain stats. I can change clothes that have different stats. And all of these play into, you know, the typical role-playing territory of, you've just got numbers, make the numbers bigger. You'll do more damage. The bigger your defense, the less damage you'll take. Your health bar grows, that sort of thing. And it's okay. Like, it's weird. It's wacky, but like, I'm really enjoying it. I think if you acknowledge it's going to be absolutely ridiculous and silly, like, I think you can have a good time with the story mode. I'm not sure how long it is. Like, I've only put a few hours into it, but I'm definitely going to come back to finish it because I do want to see.
In a way, it is kind of teaching you still about how the game functions.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you've got no connection to Street Fighter, like, this is probably the best place to start because, you know, you're starting off on a grassroots level, fighting like random low level people in the street, and you know, you'll learn how the movement works in this game. You learn how to string moves together, and again, you can have modern controls, you can have classic controls, so you can tailor it however want, which is pretty cool. And I think in terms of story, it's also a nice way to sort of know or get to learn about each character, like what their personality is like, what their style is. And then, you know, you can take that and translate that into the multiplayer hub when you maybe you find like, oh, I really like, I started with Luke in the story, so I feel most comfortable with his moveset. This is who I'm going to main, you know, in multiplayer online sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. Like, I know fighting games are hit or miss with story. Like, I think for comparison's sake, I really like Mortal Kombat story because that is literally letting me play through a long ass CGI movie with an excuse for a fight at every moment. And Capcom could have done a similar thing with Street Fighter, but I think they try to be different, making it, you know, leading into the ridiculousness of it's a role-playing game and the story is somewhat ridiculous. We're going to just lean into that and let players have fun with it. So yeah. I really like it. I think it's, I mean, again, I don't know how long it is. Maybe the experience wears thin in the long run, but at the moment, like, I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
So I'll definitely go back to it. But I think as a package, Street Fighter, as a fighting game, like, I think it's really good. I know Street Fighter 5 was hit or miss as well. Like, again,
I'm for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, but like, again, I'm missing that knowledge from my own brain because I just never engaged with Street Fighter 5. I think Street Fighter 6 feels like a return to form because structurally it caters to newcomers and veterans, and it's all tied together with this really cool online lobby system which works.
And I think even just content wise, because that was the biggest like criticism leveled at Street Fighter 5 when it came out, it was like there was no story mode, there was a limited roster, and it was like you're paying full price just for multiplayer, and multiplayer that seemed not that great at the time, you know. So this seems like a complete like course correct from Capcom, which is great. It just carries on their pattern of like understanding what their games need to be now, you know.
Yeah, and I do think, and you mentioned roster, I do think, I don't have the character count on top of mind, but I think it ticks all the right boxes. Like, all your familiar favorites are there.
Oh my God, Luke's forearms. What the fuck is going on there?
No, Jesus. He's an absolute unit, this guy.
Jesus.
So
go for it.
I was going to say, like, all the foundational characters are there, but this, I think this game is going to get support for years to come, you know, and it's a fighting game. You know, there are going to be DLC packs and they are going to bring back some characters that maybe didn't make the cut for this first launch or, you know. Yeah, but I'm very keen to play some more. You know, I'm definitely going to roll credits in the story mode. I'm going to go get my butt kicked by Jeff and Darren.
And me, definitely me.
Who are very
coming
good.
For you.
We need to play because I think you and I, in terms of skill, are probably equally matched because we're both bad.
Probably, yeah. We're equally bad.
Equally bad, so that's cool. But yeah, fighting games, fighting fans this year are going to feast. I know we've still got Mortal Kombat to come.
Mortal Kombat in October, I think.
But
and then there's another one, isn't there?
It's Tekken.
Oh yeah, I don't think that has a release date, but I think it's still coming this year. So,
but yeah. Street Fighter's definitely got things off to a good start. Like I don't see people not enjoying this game.
I've always found Street Fighter incredibly intimidating because of the control scheme and not having that muscle memory. So like
I get modded controls
and using modded controls in the beta was like immediately I was like, okay, I'm going to put time into this game.
I remember like when I mentioned Street Fighter 4 at the top of the segment where I remember playing that with my brother and that was on PS3 and I never played Street Fighter 3, but and the last one I had played before was Street Fighter 2 in arcades. And that was a thing of you got an arcade stick. So it made sense, like a quarter circle, that sort of thing. Trying to get the muscle memory down for that on PS3 at the time was like, it was just over my head. It didn't feel right. And I remember putting the time into like learn a little bit. So it's interesting because translating it here, like I can execute moves and I can do some combos, but it is, again, very cool that there's a modern alternate for not only me, but like everyone who's new to the genre. Like you don't need to sit and spend hours committing muscle memory. You can literally just have... an option to go, okay, if I want to do this move, it's literally forward and this button. It's not complicated. You can have fun doing it. And again, if you're a veteran, you don't have to engage with that stuff. You can just dive straight in and do your fancy combos as is.
Yeah.
Oh, last thing I'll touch on stylistically, like forget the single player mode is like, I think it looks okay. But in the actual multiplayer fights, that graffiti/paint style, it's gorgeous. Like I really love
it. Looks great. Yeah. And the fights you were having earlier, I think it's such a striking visual.
Yeah.
Like flair.
It's really good. Very, very special visual flair. And it's like a treat for the eyes. So yeah, good on Capcom for, you know, it's I think it's this battle of like keeping things the same, but like reinventing them. And I think like they tick the box because it feels fresh and different and it just looks really good. So yeah. Good on them. Cool, but that's my thoughts on Street Fighter 6. You and I need to fight at some point.
Yeah, I'm very keen. Very, very keen to get going with that. Very soon as well. So maybe even this weekend. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. Who knows?
Who knows?
Cool. Shall we talk about the top secret game you have been playing? I don't know if we mentioned. Oh, we did mention already. Top of the show.
Oh, yeah. We did. But yeah, this is exactly the reason why I haven't been playing Tears of the Kingdom. It's because like a couple of days after that launched, I got access to Diablo 4.
That's not the right screen.
Have since finished the entire game, played a bit of endgame stuff. And I think in a similar way to how like Street Fighter 6 is a return to form. Listen, I never thought Diablo 3 was bad. I had a really good time with Diablo 3. I acknowledge that it had issues at launch, but I am firmly of the opinion that by the time they got to the Reaper of Souls expansion, so many of the pain points had been kind of ironed out.
Yeah.
And that expansion was exceptional. I thought it was super good. Super fun and established like the end game that went on for years with Diablo 3.
No, I'm there with you in that I played Diablo 3 on launch and like I enjoyed it, but I think, you know, problems we had at the time, like auction house and whatever. So like it feels that you kind of finished the game and then, you know, you played it again and again. And the campaign wasn't that long and it got...
Yeah, it wasn't that long. The campaign also wasn't that interesting, I thought, at the time. Like
it got boring really quickly, but then by the time Reaper of Souls rolled along, it was like, oh, you don't have to engage with the campaign. You can just run through these worlds, ticking off bounties, mm-hmm. doing all sorts of interesting things, and that like really fixed the game.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think Diablo 4, you know, it's crazy to think that Diablo 3 came out like 11 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a crazy
that
amount
makes
of
me
time.
Feel old.
So Diablo 4, it shouldn't be surprising that, hey, this game is like learned from all the years that Blizzard supported Diablo 3 and, you know, some of the things that it attempted in Diablo Immortal. And I think Diablo 4 is a culmination of all of those ideas realized from the get-go as a foundation for a game that will evolve and will get better over time. So I think the thing that's most striking to me, and I said this in my review, was just how engrossed I was in the story. I think there's a much bigger emphasis on trying to tell a more engaging story this time around. And it works because you have all of these like in-game cutscenes where the camera like swoops down and you get to observe like conversations between characters far more intimately. There's a lot more focus on giving NPCs that join like your party or your quest like actual fleshed out backstories that you can kind of like engage with and see how they influence their decisions throughout the story.
Yeah.
And their interactivity is really fun. Like your party interacts a lot with you just kind of there listening, you know, your character speaks and takes part in it. But a lot of the time you're kind of just observing how your party members are discussing what's happening and their own takes on how to progress forward. And it's really, really good, I think. I can't get into specifics on many characters because, well, I'm barred from really talking about anything specifically beyond Act 2, which is not that far into the game. There are 6 acts in this game. Okay. It's a lot. Diablo 3 had 4.
It was 4,
This one is much bigger in terms of story. I think the story took me about 30 hours. It was long.
Yeah, it's quite a thing.
Yeah, it's chunky. I think part of that is also Lilith, who is the main antagonist of this one. Really good antagonist. Like, just, you know, in previous games you're fighting like demons, like you're fighting Diablo. What is Diablo's goal? He's like, well, he comes
world
from
domination.
Hell and he just exactly, it's like a very simple one note, like he is bad, you need to stop him type of thing. Lilith is not that. Lilith is like, you know, for just like context, Lilith is one of the creators of Sanctuary, which is for all intents and purposes Earth that exists between heaven and hell in the Diablo universe. And the reason she created Sanctuary is so that she could like get away from the endless fighting between heaven and hell. And, you know, she considers all humans her children because it is something she built, she created. So her reasoning for wanting to amass an army and take a fight to hell is not because like she wants humans dead. It's like almost quite the opposite. She wants to save them from this conflict that is like being staged in their world that was meant to be an entire escape from all of this. There's like really cool motivations behind what she does.
Yeah.
That I don't think any other Diablo title has kind of given any of its antagonists. So it's not, the story isn't one note. There are many times where she is conversing with your character going like, why are you fighting against me? We should be on the same side. You know, we are ultimately fighting for the same things, just through different means.
It's
super interesting. I think she's a really, really cool antagonist. And she gets some really incredible moments. It's just that in combination with like the focus on your party members, it just makes for a very interesting story that I hope they, you know, continue building upon. Like there is the hint of maybe there is the possibility of them continuing the story, whether they will or won't, you know, that's a different thing, but I really hope they do. Because by the end of it, I was like, I want more of this. You know what I mean?
I mean, Reaper of Souls, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but hasn't each Diablo had an expansion?
Yes.
So to me, it seems like a no-brainer. Maybe there will be like an expansion with an extra act or two to, you know, maybe it's a side story, or maybe it picks up and it carries on.
I know Blizzard's been explicit with saying they're not putting story content in their seasons, so like their seasonal events. But if they decide to creates an expansion down the line, then sure, that could... I mean, Diablo 2's story feels almost incomplete without the expansion. Mm. It literally just ends. And yeah. then the expansion is almost like an epilogue to that yeah. story. So it's kind of wild that they did that. Reaper of Souls, not so much, but it does continue the story.
Yeah, it introduced an act with... I can't remember the name now, but it's like a supplementary thing
yeah.
that you could miss if you know, you're not going to lose sleep over not knowing, oh my God, what happened next? And that's
But again,
story.
Diablo 3's story at its base is very rote.
Yeah.
It was just like you start to the game and you're like, well, we need to kill the demons. And that is the through line throughout. So there's very little going on there in terms of complexity.
They called this Diablo 4, not Lilith 1. Wink, wink.
Oh, you know? Yeah. It's kind of weird, though. Diablo hasn't been like the main bad in many of the Diablo games.
No,
like, I think it was like 1 in 3. That's
like
it.
It's the branding. Like, that's it.
Yeah, it's all the brand. It's a good name. I mean, yeah. when you consider the other names of the demons, like you, I don't think Mephisto or Baal like rolls off the tongue.
Mephisto 1. Wow.
Yeah, Mephisto 1. Thanks, Blizzard. Diablo is definitely a much more striking name. So I get it.
I wanted to ask, so we've got footage playing. It's running. It looks like a locked 30. Is that just hard?
Yeah,
recorded?
I think that's just the recording.
Okay, but when you're playing on PC, how was
yeah,
the performance?
I was playing on PC and it was like 140. Like I've got a powerful PC, but it's like no sweats. Like the one weird thing is that when it goes into like a cutscene, it goes to 30, which is strange to me. I don't know, especially when it's like an in-game. It's not like a cinematic. Mm. It's like, so it's weird. That speaking of, there's an opening, you know, like CGI cinematic, and then there's one later in the game. Fuck, they are so good. They are just Blizzard level,
yeah, Blizzard,
like incredible.
Like if you want some commentary on Blizzard, I do think Blizzard aren't at their peak like they were in 2015 with the launch of Overwatch and everything. They're just ticking all the right boxes, but like, I can never floor their ability to pull off cinematics because I feel like from day one, any cinematic you watch, I mean, I know there was Warcraft 2 before Warcraft 3, but I remember watching Warcraft 3 cinematics going like, oh my God, like,
yes,
this
yeah.
is insane. And now put it in 2023 when we are in a world where they can just do the same, but like way better.
Yeah. I think my footage, I think I went to get a drink or something because my character hasn't moved in a very long time.
Just skip along here.
Yeah. So from a gameplay perspective, I think this again is sort of like a melding of ideas from mostly Diablo 2 and 3. So gone is the sort of linear progression from Diablo 3 where you would just unlock abilities
skills,
and modifiers on those abilities like in a linear fashion, and then you could just equip them.
Okay.
You've got a skill tree very reminiscent of the one in Diablo 2.
Nice.
But simplified to an extent. So you've got like the skill tree has nodes, like main nodes, and each of those nodes like feathers out into like 3 or 4 different abilities, which are like different sort of like
modifiers
subclasses for your ultimate class. And you've got to spend a certain number of points in each node to unlock the next node.
Okay.
So you can't be like, well, I don't like any abilities here. I'm just going to wait until the other node unlocks. No, it's like you have to spend points there.
Okay.
So you have to deal with that. And then it just kind of progresses from there. And you reach the final like node of the skill tree by like level 30. It doesn't take super long. But then you have all these points afterwards to invest into either new abilities on the tree that you didn't get on the way down, or loads and loads of passive abilities that empower the spells
and things
you've gotten. And you're limited to essentially 6 abilities at a time. You've got 4 on your hotbar and 2 for, you know, each click of the mouse. And if you don't put an ability in that space, it's inaccessible to you. You can't use it. And that goes for like abilities that are inherent to your class. So I was playing as the necromancer and, you know, you start the game without anything. You start the game with the ability to summon skeletons. And as you progress, you unlock the ability to summon like mages and then eventually like a golem. And those aren't part of your traditional skill tree. They're just part of your class. But if I don't equip the golem on my hotbar, I cannot summon him. Okay. You know, he's not just there because of like the same thing with the skeletons and the mages. So I have to give up space in my hotbar for those and then decide what abilities I'm going to use to accentuate them. Or you have this ability where you can sacrifice your ability to summon all these creatures to get passive rewards instead and then build a necromancer more like a pseudo mage with like blood and bone magic, which is like kind of cool. Okay. There's a lot of flexibility, at least from what I saw with my class, to try out different builds. And the game lets you respec fairly easily. You can just spend money and respec any number of times that you want, which is different to like Diablo 2, which only allowed you to do it once per playthrough, which I thought was crazy. And, you know, it's a bit more thought involved than Diablo 3, where you could just change skills whenever the hell you wanted. So I respec'd a couple of times. Like I went from like an exploding corpse build to like a full-on summoning build, and then I tried a bone build, and that didn't really work out. So like I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to find viable ways to make all of these things work. But just to have the flexibility to choose when, you know, I wanted to change things up was kind of
That's
nice.
That's very cool.
I will say Necromancer is pretty great for solo play purely because the minions help take some heat off you. That's very useful when it comes to bosses, because I think the boss fights here are really good and really challenging. They are, they remind me of Souls games. They've got multi phases. Oh, cool. They force you to think about positioning in very astute ways. Like they're really, really good.
Awesome.
The bosses in the story are really good. The ones in the sort of like dungeons you find in the open world, they're a bit less so. Again, it reminded me a lot of like Elden Ring, where your main bosses were definitely highlights, but then the ones you found in like small open world ones were like, oh, that was fun, but it wasn't like as interesting. The world itself is now one big open world that is not like randomly rolled. It is a strict layout. So when you're progressing through acts, like you're literally just moving from one part of the world to another. You're not like act one takes place in Tristram, act two takes place in this place, and you're moving between them and you don't have the ability to go back. It's like you can explore the whole map as you choose. You can even do act two before act one. Like,
oh, wow. So it's not procedurally generated anymore. Is it like a fixed, this is the layout?
The open world map is not. Yeah, it is a strict fixed
thing. Oh, but the dungeons
when you go into dungeons, they're procedurally generated.
Okay.
So it's nice because you can get a real sense of place in the open world.
Which is quite cool.
Yeah. Like this path goes to the deserts, or this path goes to the forests, or, you know, and it is a huge open world. It is colossal. And you don't get your, you know, one of the big features for this one was a mount so that you could walk around faster. You don't get that until about three quarters of the game through. And you only get it once you've basically uncovered the entire map. So like, they want you to see the map first before they give you the ability to basically just run past enemies. Which is fine. I didn't really find it a huge hindrance. But by the time I got the mount, I was like, okay, I really fucking need this because like I don't want to spend a load of time doing all of this
like
shit again.
Back and forth,
But there's a lot of cool things. I think you have dungeons sprawled around the open world that on first completion, they give you something called an aspect of power. And essentially, this is like just an item that you can use over and over again. And you can attach it to armor or weapons, depending on the aspect you've got, and turn a rare weapon into a legendary with a very specific ability. So like, you know, each dungeon tells you beforehand what aspect you'll get. So, you know, you can look for the ones that will be useful to your build and your class. But it basically takes away the frustration of having to grind out dungeons and hope to God that a very specific weapon drops for you. You can be like, well, I definitely want this certain ability like that helps my summoning skill. I'm going to do the dungeon, get the aspect, put it on a weapon, and now I've got it, you know? And if it drops regularly in the open world on you know, an actual rare item, that item is usually better than the one you're able to craft. So there is still incentive to like try and find that one for min-maxing, but this takes away a lot of the frustration. And I think it's really, really smart because you can then just put it on a weapon at level 20 and you've got a rare that you can probably use for a while just because the ability outstrips raw stats, you know?
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I just think it's a really good game. I think it's a really good dungeon crawler. I played this in a very rushed manner, and even with that, I was having a great time. I just thought it was a lot of fun, and I haven't had this much fun in an action RPG in a while. And you know, the beta definitely made me think it was going to be this good, and I'm just glad that it follows through the whole way through. You know what I mean? It wasn't just like, oh, the first act is strong and then it tapers off from there. Yeah. It is stronger throughout, if anything.
Yeah. So what is the max level? Is it 50 or 60?
It's 50 in world tier 2. So you start the game with access to 2 world tiers. You've got like world tier 1, which is like easy.
Yeah.
And they make it very clear. They're like, this is literally if you just want to see the story type of thing. You know? World tier 2 is like, okay, you know, you get increased experience and the enemies are tougher. It's a bit more of a challenge.
Yeah.
That is 50. And then once you finish the story, you can do some dungeons and some side quests that basically unlock world tier 3, which is Nightmare.
Okay.
And then from there, you go into fourth. Is the max, and then the max level on the fourth world tier, I think, is 100.
Okay,
there's a lot to do.
Yeah, long legs on, you know, grinding up to level 100.
And the end game content is there. It's like as soon as you finish the game, you basically unlock this thing called Whispers of the Dead, which is essentially bounties from Diablo 3.
That's cool.
And then doing bounties, you get these things called Nightmare Sigils, which then let you unlock Nightmare Dungeons, which basically put modifiers on existing dungeons and then chain. So similar to the, what are those rifts in Diablo 3? The Nephilim Rifts?
Yes, Nephilim Rifts.
Where it's like, it's a dungeon you've played, but now it's modified in this way and the loot is completely different. So they've got that there.
Okay,
cool. And you know, they're going to do, it's a live game for all intents and purposes, so there's going to be a lot more seasonal content.
And then last thing, there are 5 classes, I think.
Yeah, 5. Barbarian, Necromancer, Druid, Rogue, and Sorcerer.
Nice. Exactly.
I would not suggest Barbarian solo. I went that route, did not end well, had to restart. Change classes completely.
Nice.
Yeah. I think if you're going solo, like, I mean, I'm not the source of knowledge in this. I've read many articles that suggest this, but Necromancer, Druid, and Sorcerer are definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
And I played Sorcerer in the beta, and I think totally fine as solo as well. Mm. Actually, really, really fun as well. I think playing, like anything, playing this game with friends is going to be the big thing. I'm very keen to get good. I lose all my progress now, which is a bit of a bummer. But I would definitely replay this campaign with a friend. I don't know if I'd do it solo again. But with a friend, I would absolutely go through this again. It was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Good times.
Good times we had in Sanctuary. That's Diablo 4.
I'm super glad that Diablo's good still. Mm. Like, considering the issues that Blizzard have been having, like, if this came out and was just a fucking train wreck, I would have been so sad. Because I love Diablo. Like, I really like this franchise. So I'm just super glad that it feels like the Blizzard of old managed to keep this going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, you've got executive producer Rod Ferguson, you know, who led Gears of War for so many years on this. So I think he understands certain things of expectations from a franchise. So,
there's a thing or two about chainsaws. So
Yeah, of course. It was weird when Marcus Fenix just fucking showed up here and just like chainsawed Diablo's head off. It was
class.
Wild.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy. Story spoilers.
Oh my goodness.
Cool. Those are the two big games. I mean, you are still playing
Tears of the Kingdom. I'm not going to talk about it because that's going to be something I sink months into.
I think the only thing I want to talk about is someone built a fucking Metal Gear in that game.
No, they built a Metal Gear, and then the best part is they walked around shirtless with Link. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Liquid Snake. Is it actually, did someone actually say that in the video? Because I saw someone say that in Discord. I'm like,
Mick,
that's genius.
Yeah, I don't know if Mick gets a credit for that, but man, Liquid Snake.
That's the episode title for sure.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm very keen to get back to that and you know, kind of contribute to the fucking
Yeah, shame you've been like radio there. Silent for the last week while you played.
But I had to mute the Discord channel because I was like, I'm just so behind much, at this point. I think who was it? Jeff, he was like, oh, I've got 11 hearts and 2 stamina wheels. I'm like, bro, I got 4
listen,
hearts. That's it.
Listen, Jeff is like, I don't have time for games. This dude is
he's
flying.
Been playing. Yeah, he's been kingdom. Playing.
I'm sitting with like 7 hearts and like a third of an extra stamina wheel. Okay. And I've put in a lot of time in this game. Maybe he's just ticking off
30 hours, you said, I think.
Yeah, well, 20 to 25 hours. Maybe he's mainlining more stuff, which could be fair because I've spent a lot more time just dicking around in this game.
I just don't understand where people get the time because I've seen like, you know, because another 10 days have lapsed from launch, so you can see your actual playtime. And
seen
people
play
like,
times.
In 10 days, I played 80 hours. I'm like, I fucking killed myself to put like 35 hours into Diablo while doing my day job. How the fuck are you doing this?
I'm
like,
right there with you. I just
don't understand.
So for those of you who don't know, where on your Nintendo friend list, and the way Nintendo works, it's quite weird, but your profile shows you how much time you've put into a game, but in like 5-hour increments for God knows what reason. But
if you're tracking it, just surface it. Like,
yeah, oh but if the first 10 days, you don't know what your playtime is. So when Alessandra says like when it was revealed, it means like, you know, if we've played a week, it'll just say, Tears of the Kingdom, first played 7 days ago, first played 8 days ago.
Yeah.
After 10 days, then it says like played for 25 hours or more, whatever. So when, you know, obviously we all started playing on the Friday and then I think it was the Sunday or the Monday, whatever, 10 days later, it reveals, you can see your whole friend list, who's played how much. And I'm there with you. I'm like, oh, I've played at the time like 15 to 20 hours. And I was like, that's a fair bit. Like I did spend like an hour or two each night playing since launch. I've got people that are like, almost in 100 hours. I'm like, how? how did you do this? Yeah.
Yeah, I just, oh my God, yeah.
It's crazy.
I really wish I wish I understood. Like, I just don't. 80 hours is like, put it in the context of like a work week. That is 2 full work weeks of like work, 9 to 5. Like, where the fuck are you finding that time in 10 days?
I don't know. Well,
are you unemployed?
If anything, I guess that's testament to how good the game is. People are
fair. Yeah, people have that appetite. So,
yeah.
Cool. Should we bounce over to game releases? Yeah. Wow, I don't have the link open. Look at me. I'm fucking terrible at this.
I should just quit.
Wow, that's why you're moving to the UK. You couldn't get me to quit, so you just fucking off.
I'm tired of podcasting. I'm immigrated. You're like, oh, we can keep the podcast going. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. You're like, no! This is exactly what I tried to move. So we're looking at games out from today, May 27th, all the way up to June 2nd. Jesus Christ.
What is this?
It's quite a bit. So, May 27th. Okay. We've got Company of Heroes 3 coming to PlayStation and Xbox Series X and S. I swear we said this last week. Did it get delayed? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
We've also got the System Shock remake coming out this week, which I'm quite keen to check out when it does launch. Come to PC, finally. Polybridge 3 coming to PC, May 30th. Return to Grace coming to PC, May 30th. Friends vs. Friends.
Nice.
Don't fight your friends. unless it's in Street Fighter. May 30th, PC. Candle Knight coming to PC May 31st. Doomblade coming to PC May 31st. Decarnation.
Nice.
Is that like the opposite of reincarnation?
Or incarnation.
It's like, wow, you've been reincarnated. We're going to decarnate you back into a corpse.
Maybe. I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the theme there.
So when you're a necromancer in Diablo and you decide to kill one of your own skeletons, that's decarnation? coming to PC and Switch May 31st. Etrian Odyssey Origins Collection, PC and Switch, June 1st. Killer Frequency, PC, new and old consoles, and Switch, June 1st. Street Fighter 6, big release for the week. PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox, June 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. It's coming to PS4, but not Xbox One. Weird.
That is a nice middle finger.
Wow. Super Mega Baseball 4, PC, PS5. PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, June 2nd. We Love Katamari Reroll plus Royal Reverie. Jesus.
Oh, my God.
PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, June 2nd. Diablo 4 says June 60th, but if you pre-order some special fucking edition, you get it on June 2nd as well. So that's technically the release date.
Oh, but I suppose
you get 4 days early access.
Yeah, okay.
So it says June 6th. That's for the regular edition, but it is technically out on Friday, June 2nd. So, okay. Yeah.
Cool. That's the week. Cool.
That is the week in games. Now, I'm going to jump on over to where the fuck are we at? News.
Everything shown at Sony's big hour-long PlayStation
showcase. I was going to start with this, but I want to start with something else.
Okay, cool. Tell me.
What do you want to start with? Naughty Dog, because that's of a weird one to me. So during the PlayStation showcase, I would have put money on there being Naughty Dog talking about their live service game there. You know, The Last of Us multiplayer title that has been in development for now like 4 years.
A long time, yeah.
Naughty Dog is not there. And I think everyone was like, what's happening? What's happening? So yesterday they just put out a very inconspicuous tweet saying they're still working on it. They're incredibly proud of the job, the development progress, blah, blah, blah. But it's still going to take time. And it was kind of a weird thing because it kind of just came out of nowhere. Yeah. Like no one seemed to be asking. Turns out people were asking. Good old Jason Schreier put out an article on Bloomberg shortly afterwards, basically saying that the team has been drastically reduced on the game because of some, well, basically as the studio starts reassessing what the game is. And it turns out that that comes after Bungie, who is now owned by Sony, came in to evaluate the progress on the game, as Sony has asked them to do. They basically bought Bungie so that they could lend expertise to all of these live service efforts since Bungie's been doing it for like a decade now.
Mm.
And Bungie's assessment of The Last of Us multiplayer project was that it lacked the ability to keep players engaged for a long period of time.
Mm.
And for something that is a live service game, that is obviously that's critically not problematic.
Good. Yeah.
Jason Schreier is basically saying the team has been scaled back. According to the two people at the studio, asked not to be named. A small group remains on the project while the company reevaluates the direction. While the game has not been cancelled, many of its developers have moved to other projects. Greg Miller from Kinda Funny tweeted, "This game is going to be cancelled." I tend to agree with him. If you've moved most of your devs onto new projects already as you reassess, I think the eventuality of that reassessment is this is not working and we move on, which is not a bad thing. More games should be cancelled.
Yeah.
But like then you spearhead them on just because of the fact, you know.
But even if they do reevaluate and go, we can make this work, it's then how long is that going to take?
It's ages away. Yeah. This is not anytime soon.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm curious because I know the last time we heard about this was... was it Summer Game Fest last year? Neil Druckmann was on stage and he says they're working on this. That's where they showed off some key art for the first time.
Yeah.
And then he also let slip that he was already thinking about a new IP.
Mm.
So do they just go in on that now?
I think it's time. I wouldn't say no to Last of Us multiplayer, but I think when your key IPs have been The Last of Us and Uncharted for more than a decade now, maybe it is time to try something different. I don't know.
And you've spent 4 years on this and now you're kind of like being like, okay, well, we're reassessing the whole thing. And while we were reassessing, we're not doing any work on it.
everyone take a load off. We're going to have a small team looking at this. The rest of you do nothing. It's cool.
The only thing that I think could be a spanner in this is Sony's like... real insistence to do live service now. Like we'll get to it in the showcase, but it was very evident that that sort of business model is now becoming their focus. I mean, they've said they want to have like X number of live service games by 2025. This one was probably one of the first wave ones. So if this isn't coming out, you know, do they forcibly go, it has to come out. We want to push in this direction. Or do they go, okay, Naughty Dog knows what the fuck they're doing. Let them work on what they are.
Yeah.
You know, typically known for. So, I don't know.
We'll
interesting
see.
Times.
Yeah, if you're a Last of Us fan. Neelan?
He can tell.
Yeah. You're live on the show. No pressure.
What the fuck's happening with this game? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose I guess we'll see. I think it'll be a new RP, obviously, at some stage. Yeah. And I tend to agree. I think this is not coming out. If a multiplayer does happen, it's like a lifetime away if they've gone back to the drawing board. So
yeah. No, this is not a thing that comes out in the next year or two.
No.
Like, if they're completely reassessing it, then... Mm. Unless they find a solution, unless in a couple of months they go, wait, figured it out. We do this, we do that. We can definitely use what we have already. You know, this is okay.
The Last of Us 1, did that have multiplayer?
It did, but it was more like a competitive factions, yeah.
Yeah.
So this started life as factions, and then it grew into its own thing, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know.
But I mean, that does... Let us jump off onto why we got to the story in the first place is Sony's big hour-long PlayStation showcase. So knee-jerk reaction. Well, out the gate, this is meant to be like Sony's E3. That's E3, not E3. Here's what's coming to PlayStation. My knee-jerk reaction is that, and I'm not alone in saying this, there was a very severe lack of first-party stuff, which is very strange given that this is meant to be your, hey... Here's what we're doing for PlayStation in the next year or two. We've got, look at all these games our own studios are working on. And then the reality, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there were like three first-party titles and
there were like three or four games in total that were exclusive and only like two of them were first-party. So
yeah, which is just like, okay, like don't get me wrong, lots of first-party stuff, but yeah.
It was just weird because like, Jim Ryan started the show being like, we are in year three, or we've had 3 years of the PS5. And like, these years have kind of been carried by a lot of the games that were
already known,
revealed and spoken about when the PlayStation 5 was launching. Mm. So, you know, that era has kind of come and gone. So this was meant to be the like, you know, what are we doing for the next 2 or 3 years?
Mm.
I don't think we really got a kind of idea of what to expect beyond this holiday season for PlayStation, which is kind of weird.
Look, unless this doesn't mean like we're not going to see any other state of plays or showcases late in the year, but it's just weird that June is like it's premium reveal season. Maybe we've just been trained to think that way. Like it's E3 time. We're going to get all the big stuff. Maybe Sony does have something planned for September, for example. Like here's a first party state of play or like another showcase. I don't know. But it feels like this showcase had huge expectations. And I don't know. The pacing of the show was weird. There was some cool games shown.
Strange,
but I think overall people were like, okay.
No, it was, I think it was underwhelming. You know, at first I was like, you know, am I being too critical? You know, there were a lot of games and a lot of them did look good or whatever. But like Eurogamer put up a very good piece being like, this felt all underwhelming from a first party perspective.
Yeah.
And I can't escape that. It's, if this had been a Microsoft show, they would be getting the exact same criticism for like, where the fuck are your games? First. You know what I mean?
Well, all this does is that it sets up Microsoft for what could be a killer showcase.
Microsoft has the opportunity to really steal some of the oxygen from here and be like, okay, you drop the ball. Look at us. They've got to deliver now. They really do. I don't know.
It's year
those
X.
Sorts of plans are set in stone
saying,
already. So.
Please, Xbox, deliver. Well, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So the show started off with a brand new IP. It is the new game from Haven Studios, led by Jade Raymond.
Mm.
This is essentially the very first indicator that, yes, Sony is getting into live service.
Mm.
This is a... You can tell sort of like a PvP live service shooter thing with the veneer of like teenagers who are angry at rich people. It felt very Watch Dogs. It almost looked like Watch Dogs 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it would be like, okay, you are going to a rich person's house to steal something. Oh, but there's another group of people trying to steal something. So now you're going to fight them. That was strange. But again, it was just a really big CGI trailer. We have no real indication of how this game plays or how it works. So I don't think people weren't really impressed with this, and I don't think I wasn't really impressed with this.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's the mood board stage of like, hey, here's what this, here's the mood of this game. Here's what it's going to feel like to play it. What does it look like? We don't know.
Who the fuck knows?
Who knows? Cool. Well,
I feel like this sort of narrative hook that it's got has been done to death already.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't feel novel or interesting at this point. So, Helldivers 2. This is kind of cool. It had been leaked a while back. I think the biggest surprise here is that it's not like an isometric shooter. It's more like a third person shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a completely different style of game. But it seems to still be very focused on cooperative shooting, where you like hunting down aliens. It's out next year on PS5 and PC. So this was another like exclusive. Yeah. I mean, at this point in the show, you're like, okay, two exclusives. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we've got cool. And then it just. Yeah. Then we got a trailer for Immortals of Avium, which is the like EA published magic shooter that's coming out in July. This game's out in like 6 weeks. Why did it have like 5 minutes here? Like it just...
I don't know. I also thought it was a bit weird because like we've seen this game
many times now.
Yeah.
Don't understand.
Yeah.
Got a reveal then shortly after of Ghost Runner 2, which is pretty cool. Ghost Runner is a rad game.
I've never played it.
I think you would very much enjoy it.
No, I'm sure.
It's like Mirror's Edge and Blades. Yeah.
With bikes now, apparently.
with bikes now too.
Yeah.
Ghost Runner 2 is out this year. It's out on pretty much every platform.
Nice.
This one was a weird one that people seem to like enjoy. Phantom Blade Zero.
Oops.
Which is like a third person action game.
I thought this looked pretty cool.
It did. It reminded me a lot of Sekiro. Kotaku says it reminds them of Ghost of Tsushima as well. It's made from a Chinese studio. Apparently, this is like building off of some lore that they've established in many mobile games. But this is their first kind of like big console game that's coming to the West. It looks cool. I didn't get much else from it other than the combat looks crazy fast. And also, very stylish.
Yeah, it's one of those things of like the combat looks very stylish, but how does it feel to play the game? Like, does it actually let you do stuff, the stuff that we're seeing, or I'd be very interested to see that in action.
I don't know if this is coming to other platforms. It's not a Sony studio, but I don't think it says.
No,
I think it just says
coming to PS5. Yeah, it doesn't actually say it's not coming to other.
That was kind of most trailers. Just says coming to PS5. You know.
Yeah.
Then we got Journey 2, which
basically. If you're watching,
I was watching this. I was like, wait, are they really doing a second Journey? Like, and then I was like, Giant Squid, it's not Journey.
This opening scene, though, is like Journey 2.
Yeah, I mean, look at those columns in the sand. I was like, oh my God.
And then it cuts to day. I mean, even this character, like it's not quite Journey, but it's the same sort of like style.
Yeah.
And then it cuts.
it's from Giant Squid Games, which is led by the artist behind Journey. So
then it cuts to this like you busy surfing through the desert. I'm like, this is Journey 2.
Fucking sick. It looks so cool. I mean, Abzu is a great game, you know, under the water. The Pathless is phenomenal. You should definitely play The Pathless. Like that is a game you will absolutely love. I'm almost certain. So now this is called Sword of the Sea, and it looks like you are just gonna surf on fucking sand.
Do some tricks while you're at it. How cool is that?
Sick. Down. Nice. Looks great. Yeah, keen on that. Awesome. That's coming, I think. No, there was no like release date, but these games have been on pretty much every platform, even on Switch. So,
yeah.
Talos Principle 2 is out.
Could you only learn
sequel to the really popular puzzle game
from the States?
Lots of people who love Portal love Talos Principle, so it's cool to see that it's getting a sequel. It's out in 2023.
Nice.
You ready to cry?
Yes,
there's a new game from the creators of Gree called Never. And the trailer made me want to cry. It was so sad.
As far as mood boards go, it's like, oh my God, you cruel studio.
I'm ready for you to absolutely destroy me.
That's like, it looks great though. Like, I don't know. We've got no indication of gameplay and stuff, but the actual style, man, it's gorgeous.
It's out in 2024.
Yeah.
Cat Quest, which is sort of like, I think the first Cat Quest was very much like a Zelda-like. Not sure if this is the same, but there's a new one called Pirates of the Peribean. I hate it.
I love it. Take my money.
It's coming to PS5 and PS4. It's out in 2024. So nice. Got a cool style to it. Do you think this will come out before Skull and Bones?
Yes. No doubt about it. Then we got Splatoon. I mean, this
was
Stars.
This was the point of the show where I was like, what is happening? What is this show? Because we've had multiple indies, and yes, they look really good, but I'm like, we get here and I'm like, we are halfway through this fucking thing. What is happening?
I laughed when it showed Square Enix. I was like, oh wow, okay, cool. Like, is this...
When I saw that and I saw the gun, I was like, yeah, is this a fucking another Devil May Cry?
Yeah, like, it's like, okay. But then it's the super serious trailer, and then it's like, no, it's basically Splatoon where paint has been replaced with water and bubbles.
Foam.
Foam. I mean,
something about the name Foam Stars just rubs me the wrong way. It's just,
yeah, it's almost like,
also, man, just watching on your screen now, that transition from CGI to gameplay was rough. It looks so bad.
It's, not quite the same thing. Look, no. I think it could be a fun game, but it's just hilarious. It's completely unexpected. Foam Stars, nice.
Kotaku says, how long will the servers hang around after release? I say not long.
Shame. Hate to see it.
The Plucky Squire, a game that mixes 2D and 3D visuals in a wonderful action fantasy adventure that can't come out soon enough, according to Kotaku.
This game looks really cool.
It looks cool. Yeah, it does look cool.
It reminds
me. Again, it's weird. Like, a lot of the games that they showed looked cool. Like, a lot of the indies especially looked cool. They're just not what I would have expected from this show.
No.
I would have expected that from a state of play, not a this is E3 to show you the future of PlayStation 5. You know, Jim Ryan's like, we've got an assortment of games to show you why you bought a PS5, essentially. And this doesn't scream
this
that.
This is why I bought a PS5, the Plucky Squire.
No. No. Teardown has come to PS5 later this year.
You reviewed those, right? It's on PC. Well.
Yeah, I love this game. It's really fun. It's like a voxel-based heist simulator. It's really fun. This is going to melt your console. The physics simulation here is nuts. It brought my PC to its knees at times. Like, so how they're getting this working on a console is beyond me.
Sorcery.
Yeah. It's nice. A fun game. I highly implore people play it because it is like a sandbox where you kind of, you've got missions, but the missions are very open-ended. You kind of solve them in your own way. And the sort of things you can pull off with physical reactions are insane. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. I mean, we've got Metal Gear Solid Triangle.
Another CGI trailer. we got confirmation that they're remaking Metal Gear Solid 3. And they're calling Metal Gear Solid Delta. Which was long
rumored, leaked or whatever for a while now.
Yeah.
I mean,
got literally nothing else except we saw Snake and it was like Metal Gear Solid Snake. Delta. And then we got the cool theme song, which was great. I love that.
What a thrill. I laughed as I come on. Look, I'm all for this, but the naming really confuses me because I'm like, okay, it's Metal Gear Solid Delta, which is the fourth letter of the alphabet for a game that is third. Like, it's got the 3 in the name, but it's also the first chronologically. So I don't know what the logic is, and it upsets
me. But the Delta
me.
Symbol is a triangle which has 3 sides, Matthew.
Of course. How could I forget this? Conrad Fall, Metal Gear Solid Circle, then Square and
Metal
X.
Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 1 is basically Metal Gear Solid Circle because it's one
there you
line.
Go. Metal Gear Solid X will be 2 because it's just 2 lines.
Metal Gear Solid Square
will
be
4. Oh my God, we've nailed this.
We have fucking cracked this
we've
code.
We've cracked the code.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Metal Gear Solid Pentagon for 5.
Nailed it.
There's no release date on that. No. Microsoft also made it very clear it's coming to Xbox. So it is not an exclusive. It's also coming to PC, I think. So
yeah. This game looks cool. No idea what it is though. The Towers of Agasba. I don't know.
It's apparently a survival game.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Who knew? Cool. Looks cool.
Got another look at Final Fantasy 16. Again,
yeah.
Like, we don't need another trailer for this. No. It's out in like a month.
Yeah, at this stage, I was like, okay, we know this is coming.
It looks fucking great, though. It looks... And I guess Sony had to show this because it is exclusive to their platform.
Mm.
It is only on PS5.
There have been so many trailers for this now. It's out soon. Why even slot it into your hour-long showcase?
Yeah.
This is pretty cool. We got a look at Alan Wake 2. I think what is most surprising about this trailer is that Alan Wake is not the only playable protagonist in this game.
That was quite surprising.
We got a new character. Her name's called... It's gone from
I cannot now. Recall now. Yeah. But she's a FBI Sage. Agent hunting it's Alan Wake Sage. After the events of the first game. And Alan Wake looks like a mad hobo. Also, we got good old Sam Lake in the trailer. Yeah, when I saw that, I just lost it. I was like what the
Sam
fuck?
Lake, a Sam Lake character written by Sam Lake, who's probably not called Sam.
Maybe he's just called Max Payne.
Can you imagine that? You know, because I haven't played it, but I know Control has an Alan Wake DLC or whatever, which
yes.
I imagine is like, it all takes place in the same world. How funny would it be if in this game they're like, yeah, we needed some extra help, so we got Max Payne to come.
Special Agent Max Payne is joining on the investigation. Fucking my word.
This game looks great. I can't wait.
I'm very fucking keen. I mean, they've gone all in on... survival horror. They made that very clear when they announced the game. You know, the first game is more action oriented. This is survival horror.
Yeah.
And this is out soon. It's October 17th. That's not that far away.
What a year
and
for they horror did, games.
They did say that all the footage shown was running on PS5. So that's nice. Pretty cool. Because it looks great. It looks really good. So yeah, I'm keen on that. That's also coming out on PC and Xbox. But yeah.
Then we got a look finally at Assassin's Creed Mirage, which looks like, for all intents and
looks
purposes,
like an Assassin's Creed game.
An OG Assassin's Creed. No, it's not Odyssey or Valhalla Origins. It's like it's OG. This is what the first trilogy of Assassin's Creed looked like.
I'm keen on it, eh? I think it looks great. I know people like it looks maybe visually a bit dated. I think that's fine when it's got so much color and style to
but
it.
But there is something, like, not like weird's the wrong word, but there's something about the visual style. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, it's not realistic, if that makes sense. Like there's almost, they've like toned it down on that front a bit, if that makes sense. It's almost like stylistic.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll play it. I mean,
it looks great. Yeah.
Assassin's Creed, Valhalla was the first Assassin's Creed like I actually played, so I've got like a huge gap of everything before that. I'd be
and this being this. More of a stealth, like open-ended stealth game, I'm fucking in on that.
Cool. Revenant Hill, which was
what a weird game.
What a because like I saw this and it looked to me as like this.
I was like Night in the Woods 2.
This is Mia from Night in the Woods, 100% same cat, but she's not a character. She's running on all fours like a cat. And I think there's a part here you actually see the bear as well from Nights in the Woods. Like,
yeah.
What is this game? And you said, I think you found an article which says it's a different game, but it's like same characters.
Yeah, so no one I think knows for sure. So it's definitely developed by the same studio as Nights in the Woods, Glory Society. And it's about a cat named Twigs, so it's not Mia.
Yeah.
And the cat is trying to become a witch's familiar, which is kind of cute.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's called Revenant Hill, but there is this suggestion that it is connected to Nights in the Woods somehow.
To me, it feels like, I mean, even looking at this lockup now visually, I'm like, that also kind of looks like Nights in the Woods.
It would be weird for them to use such an identical art style, a character that looks identical, like, and not link it. It just seems strange.
I almost feel like this is going to be a prequel that will have some catastrophic event that explains why Night in the Woods has animals walking around.
Exactly.
And living
I was
life,
thinking so. The exact same thing. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Could be. Granblue Fantasy Relink. I don't have much to say about this. I don't know. Anime.
Anime. This one also made me scratch my head. Street Fighter 6. Why is it here?
This game is out in 2 weeks.
It's literally out in the same month. It's like a stone throw away. We know. We've seen Street Fighter many times. Why did it get a 2-minute slot? I don't understand. That's there. Cool.
Ultros, cool. This kind of looked cool. The visual makeup of this, it was like an LSD trip almost.
Yeah, I was going to say,
it's like
something
a platformer. This looks really cool.
So the gameplay looks cool. Like, kind of looks like a Metroidvania. Cool. But I think the visual aesthetic is something about it. It's too much color. Maybe that's intentional.
It's like a lot of color, yeah.
It is this LSD trip, but there's just so much going on. I'm like, oh my God, it's too much.
It's almost difficult to like pass what's parts of the world and not.
And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. But I mean, it looks cool. Like, I'll give him that.
Dragon's Dogma 2 got sort of like a sweeping look at the sequel. No release date, but yeah, looks cool.
Look at this Khajiit.
I think you'd enjoy this game. It is more like a mixture of Dark Souls and Monster Hunter. So I think you would there's a diehard fan base for this game. So.
100, but it's weird that it got a sequel because all I know is that good friend Garth.
Who did not enjoy it.
Hated it and infamously gave it a 4 out of 10, which is hilarious because when the sequel
it didn't get great reviews at launch. It was like a good 6 out of 10 at the time.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying like it's funny that he also didn't give it a great score and everyone's like, oh, like 4 out of 10 from Garth.
Yeah,
like, damn.
It's not that bad.
I mean, I think it carried weight, particularly because Garth is a role-playing connoisseur. Like he loves the show. Yeah. So for him to be like, oh, no. But yeah, the sequel's coming. Then we've got
The VR segment, the very limited VR segment.
Five Nights at
Freddy's. I'll put it this way. If you were hoping this show would kind of like help you latch on to some hope that Sony's really going to support the PSVR 2, that they did a poor job of that.
This is not it. They need to follow this up with a state of play dedicated
VR focused,
to PSVR 2. Because we've got like, there's some cool stuff here. Like
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, Resident Evil 4 VR mode, that's very cool. Like, I'd love to.
Thing is, we also
that.
Knew that was coming, so yeah, that's not new. Coming. Yeah.
Arizona Sunshine 2, which...
This game, man. Fuck. The first game was like one of the very first VR shooters, and even then it felt old. I'm just like, why? I don't know.
There it is. Crossfire is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, Crossfire Sierra Squad. I think Jeff has said he's played this on PC and it's pretty good.
Nine VR.
Tactical shooter. Synapse was the only cool thing. I thought it was like some weird otherworldy shooter thing. Looked kind of neat.
The thing is, like, it looks like an interesting shooter and an interesting premise for a story. Like, it's got a good mix between the two. When this opened, it reminded me so much of Deathloop.
because on the
beach. You're walking on the beach. Visually, it kind of looks similar in terms of colors and that. I was like, hold up, what's going on? And I was like, no, it's not at all related.
Could you imagine Deathloop in VR? My God.
Oh my God, you'll vomit.
and then Beat Saber's getting a queen pack. That's about
it. Nice.
That was all the VR. That was...
That's it.
Oof.
And then
let's fly through these last few because we are way over.
Bungie's
reviving Marathon, so that's cool.
No idea what the game looks like, but stylistically,
another CGI trailer. The website basically says it's a PvP extraction shooter, so it's another live service gig. Funnily enough, not exclusive to PlayStation, despite Bungie being owned by Sony now. This will be coming to PC and Xbox as well. Strange.
Can I tell you, I still stand by the fact that I think it's almost more viable to... I know it's owned by PlayStation, but I honestly think it's more viable to release multi-platform because you give your game to a bigger audience and you reap the profits regardless.
Absolutely.
I do think there is all this talk about Xbox. Like, the exclusives will never go away, but I still think, like, Call of Duty and the Blizzard stuff, if that deal goes through, like, why would you make it exclusive to Xbox? We'll see.
No, I agree. I think for a live service thing, that's totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Destiny 2, The Final Shape. Destiny 2's next and last big expansion. I wonder if they go Destiny 3 after this. Basically just a teaser because this is getting its own showcase in August. Darren was happy.
I know this is Cade. No idea who the hell Cade is. Everyone's like, oh my God, Cade.
So Cade. Cool. Six shooter Cade.
Nice. What is this? Concord?
This was the game being developed by Firewalk Studios. This was another exclusive. But yeah, it's like a PvP shooter, also a live service game.
Nice. Another mood board.
Release window of 2024. That's about it. But again, yeah, nothing to really glean. Okay, there was no gameplay for any of the first party things.
No.
Aside from
Spider-Man.
Helldivers.
Spider-Man,
yeah.
I did laugh because by this part of the showcase, Jim Ryan's like, cool, we're basically done. Here's some hardware. And it's like 30 seconds to a minute. Okay, maybe a bit
longer. The most flyby of this hardware ever. It's like almost like he's not really confident
in it.
He's like,
oh,
yo, check this Project Q out. It's a handheld gaming device built on streaming. Okay, moving on.
We've got earbuds.
Wait, what? Like, yeah.
We've got earbuds. Cool. Now, anyways, bye.
The handheld streaming thing, I still do not understand what the purpose of it is. Because it says, requires a PS5 and a Wi-Fi connection. So it's just Wi-Fi streaming. Tell me why I should buy that as opposed to just using the laptop / tablet / phone that I fucking already own. Mm. Like, I just don't understand what...
Who the target... Like, I think there's a target market, but I do think it is such a small audience.
It's tiny. Why buy a device that is singularly locked to one purpose when you can already fulfill that purpose with a device that does so much more that you already own? You already have it. Like,
it's one room away.
Like, why did Sony co-brand all of those backbone controllers that you use for your phone for PlayStation 5 streaming if they were making this thing? What? Like,
I don't know. Who the hell knows?
The end of the show, Spider-Man 2.
Nice.
Game looks great. Game looks fucking awesome.
It looks great.
I'm so keen.
I'm very keen. Like, they revealed a lot in this trailer. Like, straight up, hey, Venom's there. Peter's got a Venom suit on. Which I think in our Discord, Jeff pointed out, I think we've all had this concern of like, what do they do in Spider-Man 2 to make Peter interesting? Because after playing Miles Morales, you're like, Peter's going to feel
Miles's
like...
Miles' moveset was so much better.
Yeah, like way more fluidity, far more exciting. Well, here's your answer. Peter's got a Venom suit and Venom looks real cool.
And it seems you'll be swapping between Peter and Miles
a lot frequently.
Yeah. Someone pointed it out, but I didn't notice it at the time. The like right piece of the UI is like your common spider... abilities that are shared between the two, and then the left one was more your specific ones like Miles's electricity attacks, and then when it switched to Peter it was your Venom attack. So maybe that's how they're segmenting the control scheme. I did not like the UI. I think the changes to the UI are bad.
Yeah, it's like they've gone way more stylistic, but I don't know, it feels
the way it moves while you're fighting.
Yeah,
it made me like motion sick. It was kind of strange.
But I
visually looks incredible. Like, it was this moment here, if you're watching the footage, when you're in the warehouse, like, there's so many of those instances from the previous two games, and this one just looks so much better. You know what I mean? Miles also has this cool thing where you can, like, stick a piece of web to a wall and make, like, a tightrope, which is super cool.
Very cool. Yeah, they feel like they did a good job of showing, you know, it's same New York, whatever, but don't worry, the two... Spider-Man you control aren't just the same old, like, where they've got new gadgets.
Yeah.
The story is going to weave between the two of them. Peter's angry.
Yeah, he's quite, I mean, shocker. Who was it? I think it was you that said, you're like, I bet the final fight is Miles versus Peter.
No, it wasn't me, but I mean, it has to be. Like,
who was said it? Mick? Jeff? I don't know. Darren, maybe? I don't know.
I did laugh.
But I could see that.
We were saying at the office, if they don't have a scene of Peter walking down the streets like Tobey Maguire from Spider-Man 3, we want our money back.
There needs to be a singing scene as well. Yeah,
him like
coming
out the store, like doing that move.
Oh my God, remember that.
Please.
Fucking hell.
Please, Insomniac, make it happen.
I will put a bet now that Miles and Peter fight and 100%. That Peter dies in this game.
You think Peter dies? Hectic. I mean, yeah, because it's a thing of Spider-Man's a franchise now. That's not just going to be like, this is the last game. There's going to be a Spider-Man 3 and 4 and 5. This is a long-running PlayStation thing now. So yeah, where do they go next? I always think with games like this, when with any sequel, I think, shit, okay, you threw everything in the kitchen sink to the first game. Now you've got to do better for the second game. What do you do for the third game and the fourth? Like, you have to keep reinventing. So maybe Peter's death is like a good story beat, you know, to leverage off whatever. And then they bring Spider-Gwen in. Cool. Sold.
Spider-Gwen. Or you do Superior Spider-Man, where Spider-Man's taken over by Dr. Ock's body. But they've done Doc Ock, so that's boring. Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, a very packed, very mixed showcase.
Again, loads of good games, just no real indication of the future of PlayStation based on those, you know?
Yeah.
So should we fly through the rest of the news? Because we are 1 hour 30 in already.
Yeah. We've got 7 minutes to wrap this up.
Alone in the Dark. Alone in the Dark. Playable Prologue is out now. The reboot is out in October as well, so it's going head-to-head against Alan Wake 2, which is nuts. It looks cool. It's got the dude from Stranger Things. Dave Harbour, yeah, that's it. And Killing Eve's Jodie Comer. There's some money being thrown at this project. It looks cool.
Survival horror fans are feasting this year, along with fighting fans.
Absolutely.
Just
feasting.
So much coming. Let's just tick this
Prince
off.
Of Persia. Yeah. So remember they were remaking Sands of Time. It was announced a while back.
Yep.
And then it even got to the point where it had a release date. It was revealed in 2020 and anticipated release date of January the following year. It was delayed twice before initially shifting developers completely from Ubisoft Pune to Mumbai and Mumbai to Ubisoft Montreal. And now Ubisoft basically is just updated saying that it is in the conceptual phase again, and we shouldn't expect to hear more about it for a long time. So
yikes. And then ending on some bad news for South Africans, there's a price hike coming to video games. And
it's expected.
It's expected given the real shit exchange rate. So according to Glitch, there's I just want to pull out one line here. According to new local listings for Diablo 4 and Final Fantasy 16, physical games in South Africa have officially edged to the 2,000 rand mark. If you pick up the standard edition of Diablo 4, it'll cost you 1,999 for a copy on PS4 and PS5 and Xbox. Which is horrendous. Like, holy hell, that's a lot of money. I think it's not in this article, but I think I did see Marco tweet out that for Final Fantasy, I don't know if it's for both, but I know for Final Fantasy 16, the local distributors will absorb the cost, so it's not bumping up yet. But yeah, thereafter, expect to pay big bucks for some games. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's expected. The exchange rate is doing such fucking wild things that, like, something's got to give at some point. So people always be mad and think it's retailers taking more profits for themselves. Like, that's super not the case. They are actually paying more for the stock. So what do they do about that, you know?
This just makes things like Game Pass even more lucrative.
Yep. If you, $2,000 a game versus, what, $150 a month for Game Pass?
You could, just that's, pay a year's worth. Crazy. Get all the first party Xbox stuff.
I mean, a year's worth of Game Pass is cheaper than a single game.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, no. That is news for this week. A lot of Sony stuff. Cool. We've got literally 3 minutes to wrap this up. So
why do you have load shedding?
Because Lance has got some lessons to do.
We're moving on to questions. If you have any questions, you can email us, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on our social media at Checkpoint Chat. I don't think we have anything this week, but I still have to say the rigmarole so that people know for next time.
No, we do have a comment from good pal Miles Orfina, the land down under, who says, "Hey guys, just wanted to wish Matthew and Lenska well on their upcoming adventure. Look forward to hearing all the stories of life abroad, and happy birthday to Matthew as well."
What a guy. Yes. What a champ.
What a dude.
That is fast approaching, that move. We will figure out scheduling
closer
to the time. But it is fast approaching. I think it's stressing Matthew out far more than it's stressing me out.
No.
We'll figure it out. Don't worry.
Cool.
Yeah. So if you want to send a comment or a well wish to Matthew, he's not gone yet. It's still like 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
Favorite thing I'm telling people is like, oh, we're never going to see you again. I'm like, wow, I'm not dying.
Going to the land of the king.
I'm going to exist in social media. I'll come visit. Like, don't worry.
Yeah. But you can send us questions or comments, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com or on any of our social media.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And that has been episode 225,
depending on your mood.
Depending on my mood of Checkpoint Chat. As always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for bearing with us with the slight delay on the publishing of the episode, obviously. Just trying to not go to a video game jail, an actual jail. But yeah, Street Fighter 6, good. Diablo 4, good. Video games, very good. Good state of them. And we hope you have a lovely week. And we will be back, as always, next time on Checkpoint Chat. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.